Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rights Radio Self-Help Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, and the Rights Radio Self-Help Hour is brought to you by StarPublications.com and by RightsRadio.com, where consumer, economic, homeowner, health, and security rights have a permanent address. We're also pleased to announce RightsUniversity.com, the first self-empowerment university on mobile apps. Now, how large award and how high-profile personal injury cases benefit big insurance companies while making it more difficult for average citizens to obtain medical help or compensation. It seems counterintuitive, but that's what we're going to be speaking about today. And my guest is Jeff Jacobs, a plaintiff's attorney. Jeff has practiced in Florida and been a member of the Florida Bar since 1985. He's also a member of the Federal Bar, the Court of Veterans Appeals, and the Dade County Trial Lawyers. Jeff has won numerous high-profile cases. If you're determined to fight for your rights in a personal injury case and you're based in Florida, you can also reach Jeff at 305-443-3160. Hi, Jeff. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Jeff, can you give me a little bit more background on yourself?
I graduated Duke University and the Nova Law Center in 1985. I've been practicing basically plaintiff's personal injury, anything that involves an individual's rights with another individual or with an insurance company or with a governmental entity. For instance, I could give you basically what I did today. This morning, I met with a doctor's office as concerns the medical condition of one of my clients, where we're going to be going to trial because the insurance company for the at-fault party isn't even willing to pay offer us as much money as the medical expenses she's incurred because of her injuries. I then met with someone else today where we're putting the finishing touches on a complaint. This girl was sexually assaulted while in school during school hours by someone in a position of authority at that school. Again, the representative of the insurance company representing the school board doesn't want to provide any compensation. That is what I try to do. I try to gain compensation, usually from insurance companies, where individuals have had certain rights trampled or been injured in certain ways that or not as a result of any wrongdoing on their part. That's the kind of work that I do.
Well, that's where our discussion began, because we were talking about high-profile cases like the McDonald's coffee case, the huge rewards involved, and you pointed out to me that that's not always in the interest of the average consumer. They think that those high-profile cases, well, that could be there someday, but the opposite is the case.
What these high-profile cases do is they create the rhetoric that insurance companies can then preach and can point to in their cries for tort reform. I believe that plaintiffs' trial lawyers provide access to the courts for people that wouldn't otherwise be able to have access to the courts. It's one thing for somebody to be able to pay out $250, $300, $350, and it goes up to $700 to $1,000 an hour for a lawyer. But the average injured person cannot do that. Instead, his lawyer works on a contingency fee, getting a percentage of the outcome. The McDonald's case is always pointed out to show how plaintiff's lawyers make so much money on this contingency fee? Well, the fact of the matter is, in that particular case, the plaintiff and her attorney were willing to settle for a very small sum.
What's a
However,
small sum?
I believe it was $40,000. The woman was burned with third-degree burns. The McDonald's in question had had prior complaints about how hot their coffee was. In fact, if you see now, and nobody will give the trial lawyers any credit for it, but when you go to a McDonald's, they ask you how you would like your coffee. They're putting in the cream. They're putting in the sugar. They now have it in cup tops where you can't get burned. All as a result of, so McDonald's had knowledge that the coffee was too hot. The woman got burned, third-degree burns. Third-degree burns are in the continuum of burns the most significant of burns. You have first-degree, second-degree, and then third-degree. So you have a significant injury. Then they were willing to settle for a much smaller amount than the jury ultimately awarded them, which was in the several millions of dollars. And everybody says, boy, getting burned by a cup of coffee and you're getting several millions of dollars. But again, the plaintiff wasn't looking for that. It was the insurance company for McDonald's that forced her to go to trial in the first place. Then what you also don't understand is six people had to decide to award that person that money. Now, I don't know about you, but I find it difficult to convince one person as to my opinion, let alone six. And then these six people awarded that individual the money. Six strangers felt that she was entitled to that money, yet McDonald's can go around and use it to say, like we hear at all of these healthcare meetings, we need tort reform now. But if six people felt that was the right amount, who is to say that that's wrong and that we need tort reform because of it? And they had the opportunity to settle that case for significantly less, but it's more valuable to them now to argue for tort reform.
Does that mean she received the money, or do they then go to appeal and appeal and appeal and keep it up in the air and she never sees anything? What happened?
That's a very insightful question, Joyce. After a verdict is rendered, the first level is you ask for a new trial. Then, assuming that's not granted, you do have the option of appeal, but what you also have is a doctrine called remittitor, which allows the judge the discretion to reduce a verdict by a percentage. In that McDonald's case, not only was it appealed and appealed and appealed, as you talked about, but also they moved and were able to obtain a remittitor of approximately 20% of the verdict.
Was that after it was appealed or before?
That would be before it was appealed. Oh. After a hearing that has the power to go ahead and do that.
Did the woman actually see any money as this was going?
She ultimately did receive the money, yes. But if you're asking me for a case to get to a jury trial, takes probably 3 years at a minimum before it gets in front of a court. Again, the lawyer who's handling the case on a contingency fee is outlaying money for medical records, depositions, expert testimony, doctor's meetings, perhaps videotaping a witness, investigation costs. When you bring a case to trial, you at a minimum have expended $20,000 in your own costs to bring that case to trial, and you probably expended over 300 or 400 hours. So if you take 400 hours at $250 an hour, you You've expended $100,000 in lawyer time, and you've expended $20,000 in costs.
This is, again, the hidden story, but we're talking here about the little guy who gets injured, who gets hurt through no fault of their own. Some of it...
You find it harder to take certain types of cases where you know that the person's injured and he does have a problem and it does affect his life. But if it doesn't have something that makes it jury appealable, or it doesn't make something that it's going to be worth your time to spend all that time to take it to trial, you can't go forward with it. And because of that, thousands and thousands of people are actually denied the access to the courts that they deserve. Because, again, I'm taking my chance as well. And if I'm running a business, which I am, I have to be pretty certain that I'm going to be successful on my chance. Otherwise, I'm going to go out of business very quickly. It's always the exception that's used to prove the rule, and that's not the proper way to do it. It winds up making bad examples, you know, and it's what can be pointed to, but in essence, it only makes it more difficult for someone that's the legitimate claimant. If a person wants to bring a lawsuit, should that person be allowed to do it or not? Now, I find that most attorneys will not bring a lawsuit that they feel is frivolous. And I would say that in an average week, I turn down two or three cases a week. And that's people that feel they're entitled to redress. As an impartial funneling device, I don't believe that they are entitled to it. And therefore, I say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't help you. But it seems as if the general public is looking for it more than the attorneys are willing to provide it.
But it is something I'm going after. So if they heard what just happened, this is why. And that has to do with the secondhand smoker, the smoker next door. And that since that smoke has started and has no end to it, it's in the halls, it's seeping into my unit, I'm getting into these coughing fits from the stale air in my apartment. And while it's not a personal injury case that would go to your attention, I'm being injured. And there are a lot of injuries like that, including emotional injuries. So let's address that a little bit in the time we have left. I'm not the secondhand smoke, because I know you don't deal with it, but it's a genre of a type of an injury for which one has very little recourse.
There's a lot of injury for which one has no recourse. One that stands out in my mind and occurs, and it's a system unto itself, is workers' compensation. Workers' compensation, and that was a pet of Governor Bush, was his desire to change the workers' compensation laws, and frankly he effectuated that. And the laws are so pro-employer and so difficult for a worker to recover. And I think part of what I was talking about earlier, the public has a certain expectation, and a lot of that is garnered from what they read in the paper, the McDonald's verdict, or something else, that they come in with this expectation, and in actuality, the law does not provide that for them. Where I was going with that was workers' compensation. This is a system that came about after the Great Depression. It was one of the first things that labor unions were able to bring in, and that was that if you're injured on the job, instead of being thrown to the wolves, so to speak, you were entitled to be compensated for your medical expenses and your lost earnings. And that system continues to today. But what's changed is that worker that now can no longer go back to his job or his employment, he has no right under the workers' compensation system to sue for any pain and suffering, to sue for any mental anguish, to sue for the loss of enjoyment of life that he can no longer provide for his family, or he can no longer take the vacations, or he has to move to smaller quarters. That is not an element of damages at all. It's supposed to be a trade-off with the fact that in the workers' compensation system, you receive your benefits immediately, in that if you're hurt on the job, the workers' compensation insurance company, insurance carrier, is supposed to send you to a doctor, and you're supposed to be getting that medical treatment immediately. The same thing if you're not working. The workers' compensation insurance company is to be paying your lost wages, and you're to get it now while you're losing the wages. In the tort arena, what people consider the general personal injury arena, you don't get that until the end of your case, either by settlement or by jury verdict. It's your damages that have culminated throughout the case, where in workers' compensation, you are paid as you go. Now, of course, if you are not paid as you go, or you don't receive the medical care and treatment you're supposed to receive because the fox is watching the hen house, the insurance company is the one providing it or paying for it to be provided, then you miss out on both ends. You're not getting your immediate benefits, and you don't have what you have in tort law, which is the right to pain and suffering, mental anguish, and the loss of enjoyment of life.
I think what you're saying is so important. Let's really emphasize this.
Unfortunately, workers' compensation, in terms of a recognition that there was more to a person than just his earning capacity, that we recognize that people have certain joys that a two-armed person may have while a one-armed person doesn't, or a person that was totally functioning before and now because of an injury has brain damage. His life is not going to be the same as it was. Now, in workers' comp, it'll only be looked at that he's earning less. In the tort system, it'll look at it in the total picture.
But he's not allowed to go into the tort system? That's what I'm getting at.
No, he is not. That's an exclusive remedy of the employer. So if you're hurt on the job, that the employer is immune from any tort liability. If you can show that the employer was willful, wanton, or reckless, in other words, that he had you working on a machine that was held together by a piece of chewing gum, maybe you could get outside of the workers' comp system. But absent something like that, the answer is no.
So the worker, if they have a long-term consequence, injury, emotional damage, whatever, has no recourse, and the non-worker has little recourse because they can't afford the attorney, or the attorney can't afford them.
It would depend upon the attorney's working as a percentage of the recovery. He has to look at what he sees the potential recovery to be and the cost of obtaining that potential recovery.
But of course, the average citizen can pay the attorney. Just say, I'm going to pay you for every hour you spend.
Does have the opportunity to do that. In a workers' compensation setup, attorney's fees are governed by statute for the claimant, not for the insurance company's attorney. In fact, it's interesting. The claimant attorney, that's the injured person's attorney, has to have his attorney's fee approved by a judge. The insurance company's attorney doesn't have to have his fee approved by a judge. In fact, nobody even knows what he earns. But everybody gets to know what the claimant's attorney earns. Some of it's regulated by statute, and some of it all has to be approved by the court. There's no such thing as an even playing field. You could also be injured outside of the workplace and have to miss work as well.
In neither of those two cases, are you going to find relief through workman's compensation, the first part because you don't have it, and the second part because it doesn't apply. And now you call a half a dozen attorneys, and they say, tell us your problem. You do, and it's just too small for them to be involved, but you're stuck with the problem.
Everything you've said is correct, and that's what makes the argument about all these frivolous lawsuits somewhat specious, in that who can afford to file a frivolous lawsuit? I don't have the time to waste filing frivolous lawsuits, and I know that my fellow attorneys that I know don't have time to file frivolous lawsuits. So really and truly, what you're saying is correct. Unless you have something that, certainly on a contingency fee, unless you have something that's going to merit the attorney's time, it's not going to be filed. Now, if the person can pay you on an hourly basis $300 an hour, then, you know, maybe you can file it. But on a contingency fee, you have to be very judicious with your time.
I want to count you in as our in-house expert on personal injuries. I think it's an important topic. I'm so glad we could cover it today, and really I do thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
I will see you again next week, same time, same place.